Merci beaucoup.
Thank you very much, Your Excellencies, dear panelists, dear participants, dear friends of the coalition. As usual, it's an honor for me to be able to take the floor today on this session that is being held in parallel to the Committee for the Protection and the Promotion of Cultural Diversity. I'd first like to thank the International Coalition for the Diversity of Cultural Expressions, as well as the Canadian Commission for UNESCO, as well as the UNESCO Chair for Communication and Technology, for their precious support. I'd also like to commend the work of the experts and the representatives of civil society who are present here today, who play a key role in the implementation of the discussion group's recommendations on the diversity of cultural expressions, especially in the digital field. To ensure the diversity of cultural diversity in the digital sphere is a major challenge. Digitality, as well as artificial intelligence, transform cultural production, and its advances offer certain opportunities, but also exacerbate, I have problems with this word, they exacerbate imbalances too, and threaten cultural diversity and linguistic diversity online. The concentration of digital platforms, the recommendation algorithms, and the use of mega data impact the local diversity of cultural expressions and also impact the access of different actors to the market. And that is why we need to work to strengthen the pertinence of our convention, our 2005 convention, for the digital era. We need to find ways of having meaningful and equal dialogue to maintain and guarantee the transparency of algorithms and to adopt policies that favor local creative productions and also enshrine and defend the rights of creators. The common goods have to be at the heart of our action, and so the role of civil society is no doubt fundamental. The Declaration of 2022 highlighted the importance of dialogue with civil society for an inclusive governance of culture in this digital era. Your commitments are essential to guarantee solutions and to guarantee an implementation, an effective implementation of adopted measures. 2025 is an important step. An important milestone, not just for the convention, but also for culture more generally. It is the anniversary of the 2005 convention, and it is an opportunity for us to be able to strengthen the defense of cultural diversity in the digital era. There are challenges that we are often still unaware of when it comes to digital production, but as I said, this word that I don't really like, the exacerbation of different problems is an issue. So in this context, it is essential to promote fairer and more just cultural exchanges, to strengthen the government's mechanisms in order to give greater visibility, especially to local productions. After the declaration in Barcelona of Mondiacult, and in light of that declaration, this commitment of ours takes on a more strategic angle. We need to respect cultural diversities, but we also need better regulation faced with the challenges presented by AI and the concentration of digital platforms. If you'll allow me, it's been days that I've been reflecting on how to present the emergency situation to which we're confronted with today. As you know, It is important to find mechanisms so that the companies that are investing in innovation can continue to fray a ethical way forward. But I've also studied the 10 years of debates and declarations on cultural diversity. And this issue is something that can actually present a real danger when it comes to the disappearance of different cultures, even within one and the same country. And this is the call that is being made by most of the representatives of your respective countries at national level. There is a call for action. So it's not just words, it's not just saying that we need more reflection. There's a call for firm, clear, and effective decisions. And that is why we had this work done by experts, supported by NGOs that also have to be taken into consideration. And one must not be afraid to make decisions that show that UNESCO is fully within its mandate, because this convention really has the strength that you all desired it to have when it was launched. So we do not want the digital transformation to happen against the richness of cultural diversity, and you can see the culture is a accelerator of sustainable development. This has been proven, we don't need to prove it again, but it is something that needs to be promoted and protected in all its dimensions, and not only in some of its dimensions. Thank you for your attention, and I will stick around for all your comments and your reflections. So thank you for your attention, and thank you for waiting for me these few minutes. Can you hear me? So, and now it's my turn to welcome you here today, to welcome you to this exercise of experience sharing and sharing of ideas about the issues related to the diversity of cultural expressions. These issues that, as my colleague said, have been exacerbated because of the rise of new technologies. So I'll be the chairperson for this session. And I'm sitting next to Guillaume Guyer, Viviana Reinhell, and Destiny Chuipali, and Liliana Alamia. And I hope I've pronounced your names correctly. This on top of the ADG for Culture, who spoke earlier. And these are the four people who will be interacting and talking about the exercises that we've launched recently. There are participants in the room as well as those present online who can also join the discussion. I was asked to remind you of the context of this reflection group. The Canadian Coalition for the Diversity of Cultural Expressions wanted to, last spring, launch a sort of congress or conference during which people and experts from civil society could reflect and have exchanges on the issues that had been those that were brought to the attention of the expert group. So we have two members of the expert group here, and they'll be able to shed some light on the recommendations that they formulated in their report. Let me also remind you that during these exercises, which were carried out in this Quebec conference, the participants agreed that there was a necessity to have laws and recommendations that are up to date and up to task. And they recognize that the risks that minority cultures are exposed to have to be taken into account in the deployment of technical instruments such as AI and online platforms. We need to have measures that can promote the discovery of local artistic expression. We insisted on the importance of copyrights, which allow for a true recognition of the work of authors, as well as a decent and just remuneration. All this to protect what is the very basis of artistic creativity, which is human creativity, of course. There is a need to make sure that the systems of generative AI function in such a way as to ensure the dissemination of works, or rather the methods that rather to shed light on the mechanisms that are used within these AI systems and their algorithms. We also insisted on the importance of laws to protect artists and performers. In order to protect them from being shadowed online, if you will, or doubled online by AI solutions. We need to ensure linguistic diversity, especially when it comes to indigenous peoples, and especially when it comes to peoples who belong to minority groups. We also highlighted the need for transparency when it comes to companies using artificial intelligence, especially when it comes to using texts that are purely generated by AI. We need to know when this is the case. We need to know when productions are created by spirits other than the human spirit. So that is a bit of the context within which this exercise has taken place. And we are suggesting that we move forward on this and that we share other experiences and other dimensions that might be noteworthy, that it might be pertinent to share. And in order to do that, I suggest we start by doing the following. And for the next 10 minutes, we will listen. We will listen to the different positions of the representatives of civil society. So I'll turn to Guillaume Puyer, who is the Secretary General of the French Coalition on the Diversity of Cultural Expressions. And I'd like to ask him to be able to share his reflections and recommendations. And sorry for this nasty noise. Thank you. I think this round table is interesting and important. And I'll start with a bit of a reaction, but I think we'll be able to then mention the 11 recommendations that were formulated by the group of experts. It's true that there is one recommendation that is being mentioned more than the others. We'll also speak about the additional protocol. But I wanted to first commend the work, the quality of the reflective work that was undertaken by the experts. I think this is a very rich body of work. that was very sorely needed. And I wanted to pick up on a word that you mentioned, Director General, not exacerbate, even though that is a very pretty French word, but the other word, which is urgency, emergency. There is an emergency, and there will still continue being an emergency. The different questions that are brought up by the digital sphere in the context of creative, of artistic and creative expressions, these issues were already brought up a decade ago to make sure that the convention was adapted to the issues brought up by the digital sphere. We can see that things are picking up, that things are being accelerated in time and space. To the Soulassés in Paris, there was a summit on artificial intelligence during which there were some positive elements. There were some words that came from the world of cinema and from other creatives that really did reframe the questions to remind us of the issues. It's not just that AI is here. AI is here, whether we like it or not. It will continue to deploy itself. So what the players these last few days mentioned was to deploy a framework that would respect the works of artists and the diversity of cultural production. Then again, there were some things that were not so positive, especially the final declaration on the issue of intellectual property, copyrights, and so on. And the question of cultural diversity was a bit watered down. But what is important is that it also motivates our discussions on the global framework. The emergencies can be dealt with at local, regional, national or global levels, but at international level, we need to have a framework that would allow us for stronger regulation. And regulation is not something that need be directed against innovation. Sometimes we oppose regulation and innovation, but these two terms are not antinomical. We can have a regulation that can encourage innovation and that allows this innovation to develop itself in a legally sound context and on something that's economically sound. This international framework is indeed something that is extremely important and extremely sensible. And beyond the question of the emergency, the convention has reached a crossroads. We are going to be remembering 20 years of the convention this year, and I think it's important that we look back in time a bit to see the different milestones that led to and went hand in hand with this convention. And these rules are things that are still valid, still applied and applicable, with different modes of distribution and production of culture. So the idea isn't to say that the convention has nothing to say on the new challenges at hand, but quite simply, I think that we also need to have an international tool that allows us to adapt or to adopt the recommendations of the convention and the main pillars of it. Because when it comes to artistic creation, there are issues related to creativity. We can see the opportunities as well as the risks involved, risks that are especially made all the more urgent by the AI creative productions. I work in cinema when it comes to screenplays. And artists are very worried about the cultural work that up until now has been theirs. So there are risks and opportunities and threats. And we need to be able to see in the global sphere, the international sphere, well, we're working at European level to guarantee a framework that will guarantee transparency in the way that works are utilized to feed into the AI system. In the convention, we hope to be able to go further as well when it comes to the implementation and the acceleration of the global framework that is here to promote cultural diversity in these very singular times. Thank you. And now I'd like
Rangel to explain her position, and you are involved regarding the cultural diversity.
Okay, thank you. I came from Fundación Carisma. We are an NGO, a civil society organization that works in the defense of human rights in digital environments. So we have been working around AI transparency, cybersecurity, cyber patrols. We are trying to ensure that the implementation of the technology in Colombia have some respect with human rights. In the last like 15 years, we have been working in topics related to access to knowledge, mainly intellectual property. We are also observers at WIPO. And the last, I think, 4 years, we have been working on cultural rights and digital environments. For that reason, we have been following the implementation of the open roadmap proposed by the convention in Colombia. And we have found that this open roadmap for digital environment haven't been implemented in our country. For that, we think that the first recommendation about the protocol is going to be useful to try to help our governments to ensure some measures to try to protect the culture in digital environments. We are now like discussing in Colombia the approval of a new general law in culture, and this year they don't have anything about digital environments in the general law that they are proposing now. We ask what's happening with the digital environments, and they say, we know that is something dangerous about AI. We know that the things that platforms are doing for our musical ecosystem, our filming ecosystem, is dangerous, but we don't have like the tools to try to face it, so we are going to try to approve a new law, but we are not going to say anything about digital. So, for sure, we know that is like it's a big mistake to approve a law this year without any in digital, but we don't know what to do. For that reason, we support the first recommendation, because we think like something that is binding could be useful for us to try to advocate inside our countries, because these recommendations that supports advocate is advocate inside the countries, advocating like in regional spaces, advocating in international forums as this one, but without binding tools, we cannot do anything inside our country. So for that reason, for us, it's very important, this protocol, because sometimes it's better to have these protocols to try to change things inside our country. But also, we found that recommendations 5, 6, and 7 that are talking about support advocacy actions, raise public awareness, and mainly, the 7th one, that is creation of national digital culture capacity plans, are the ones that are more useful for us. So we think that having a binding tool as the protocol need allow us to say, okay, we can now try to build something together between civil society, between government, between international participation to try to change things. And also, we think that having experts to try to support the building of these advocacy plans or these cultural plans in our countries is helpful. Also, we think that we have to discuss among global South countries what is better for us, because sometimes in here we discuss things that are not super useful in our countries, but I'm sure that, for example, at WIPO, now we have something like an alliance that is African countries, Latin American countries, and countries from the global South with the same necessities. For example, in European countries and North American countries, you can ask the platforms to respect your rules. But in Colombia, we have to act with the law that is implemented in United States, because we don't have, for example, rules for Spotify just for Colombia. So, and now we are facing all the problems that came with the new government that is saying, okay, we are not going to regulate anything about platforms, and we think that the advocacy about cultural topics is not just with this kind of cultural plans. It's also a discussion in the Congress. It's also a national discussion of what are we going to do to face what platforms are doing in our country. So I left it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On se retourne maintenant vers...
We'll now turn towards the two experts. The two experts in this experts group. I suggest that they give us some brief feedback on the meetings that took place. We'd like to hear them about the different elements related to their recommendations, especially that when it comes to the additional protocol. Why this extra protocol? Why were there other alternatives that were considered? What's the timeline looking like? And how do all these measures that are being recommended, how do they complete each other? So first of all, I'll give the floor to Destiny Chojawi, and then I'll give the floor to Liliane Aladnia, who will also take the floor. Thank you, Professor Trudel. Good afternoon to all and sundry. It's wonderful to be here, to be able to share with you the fruit of our reflections and our works and the meat of the recommendations that we submitted for your for you to analyze. So I'll give you a few bits of context and a bit of feedback on the process that led to these recommendations. As you know, our group embodied geographic diversity, the diversity of points of view, the profiles of the different experts, and the diversity of the different sectors represented in the digital sphere and in the sphere of cultural expressions. So we worked on this for 6 days. There were two sessions. There was one in Quebec in May of last year with a stage which I will qualify as a diagnostic stage, whose goal was to understand the issues at hand, to formulate them, to prioritize them, following the four topics that were presented to us for our reflection. And I'll remind you of them: the promotion of linguistic diversity and cultural content, the discoverability of creativity to ensure visibility, the platforms, and of course the question of artificial intelligence and its impact on creative industries and cultural industries. So starting with these themes, these topics, we tried to structure them into work areas, because we said to ourselves that if we wanted recommendations that are as widely applicable as possible, we had to leave the sectoral siloed approach to keep more transversal issues on in the foreground, things that are common to all these different issues. So that was also our goal in our meeting in Paris last year, and this is what led to the recommendations that have been presented to you. So let's go back to technology, because I think this is an essential element for you to understand how we worked and how we proceeded. It's important to insist here on the fact that we really did feel the urgency of the situation, as our chairperson mentioned earlier. Because what we thought we had acquired, thanks to this convention, that what we gained through it is now threatened and rendered more fragile. And it's important that we be able to either lay the groundwork for the future. This is something that we know how to do. We read, we did a lot of documentary research. We formulated recommendations. And in 2017, when we adopted the directives, we were also laying groundwork for the future. Even roadmaps are a way of planning for the future. So, but how can we go further? How can we raise our impact when it comes to this major turning point that we're faced with now, but also when faced with the cynical attitude of people today, people who work in the cultural sphere, but who only swear by the commodification of culture, and who basically justify their approach on an economic and commercial approach. A profit-driven approach. So we need a sort of framework that is flexible, that can be implemented well, but also an instrument that will be able to reinforce the standard-setting imperative of our convention. So we have certain scenarios, and we basically set some priorities when it comes to the field of action, the standard setting on the one hand, the sharing of good good practices, advocacy and awareness raising, and then, of course, all the issues that are related to capacity building. So that is the general context of our reflections, and I'll give the floor to my colleague now, who will be able to talk to us about the first recommendation, that of the standard setting part.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Thank you, Destiny. Yes, perhaps I'll start with this first recommendation. We don't have a lot of time today, so let's start with the additional protocol. Already, since the first meeting held in Quebec in May 2024, many concerns were expressed by the experts on the issue of normative action. So we decided to have an area as such dedicated to normative action. As a lawyer, when we mention a legal instrument in such an ever-changing field, and a fast-changing field, we know that there's always a risk of obsolescence. So that was one of the first arguments that I heard from my colleagues at the time, who were saying that we had to make sure that we don't just draft an instrument that's already out of date at the date at which it's published, because that wouldn't make any sense. Now, the other aspect is the internal procedures at UNESCO. There are procedures to comply with, to adopt a document, what kind of document that leads to legal uncertainties if we have a host of different documents. So then we noted that we needed something that could be more agile, that could be adjusted as we go. So that could be a document dedicated to principles, values, and perhaps such a document wouldn't be so out of date after a few years. It could be longer lasting. And we all agreed on the fact that we needed to describe and target clear, firm actions that could be undertaken by the parties to go beyond mere words. The point being to enrich what already exists, because this convention is applied to the digital environment, as was repeatedly said, but there are a lot of other instruments dedicated to the digital environment today. So, for instance, the Global Digital Compact. So shouldn't we take that better into account to make these instruments clearer and more operational for the cultural and creative sectors? And we also noted that if we were to start with a new legal instrument, it has to be strong, ambitious, and binding. That was paramount. And between the two meetings, we consulted the legal department of UNESCO. And let me tell you now very quickly the two possibilities that were identified at the time. We actually identified seven options in total at first, and we eliminated a few of them very quickly. First legal possibility for us, amendments to the 25 convention. That risks opening up debates on issues that we don't want to revise. Second option, revising the operational directives. We already did that. That's something that we know. It's quite simple. But of course, there's an internal procedure for that, but that wouldn't be legally binding. It could also be a general declaration adopted by the Conference of Parties. That would also not be legally binding. And we thought that that might not be ambitious enough in terms of UNESCO's support for these issues. We also thought about a possible action plan adopted by the Conference of Parties, but again, here we thought that this was not meeting the expectations that were identified during our works. We saw, for instance, that the digital roadmap that was adopted wasn't that successful. It was hard to implement in practice for governments that didn't already have a strategy in the field. So would an action plan have worked? Not so sure, so we eliminated that option. Other possibility, a recommendation by UNESCO's General Conference. Again, recommendations, so not legally binding. And here we thought that would be under the umbrella of the Executive Committee, and the monitoring or the follow-up would be done outside of the Convention Secretariat, therefore. So we also eliminated that for this reason. Other possibilities that we mentioned, an interpretive declaration of the convention, thanks to a resolution bearing it. But even though that could have been legally binding, the issue here would have been up to where we could have gone. To what extent could we cover what we needed to cover with such an interpretative declaration, because we have to stick to what's in the convention. So we could have potentially used that as part of the 1969 Convention on the Right of Treaties, and using that declaration as an ulterior agreement by the parties on the interpretation of the convention. So that was an option, but we then thought that if we were to adopt To go as far as to adopt a new legal instrument, it may as well give us the margin for maneuver needed, the leeway needed to handle all of these issues in an efficient way. So the last option, which is the one that we picked, is the additional protocol to the convention. That's recommendation one in today's report. The idea would be for that protocol to be added to the convention with specific provisions on the digital environment, and it would come into force at the time when a sufficient number of parties adopted it. And we could also adopt this protocol, therefore, in 2027, and I'll give the floor back to Destiny to give you more details on that. Thank you, Liliane. Yes, I'll just elaborate on that a little bit, and I'll also answer the questions that were asked, namely the deadline. Why do we feel like it's urgent to us to act? Well, the point or the idea behind the protocol would mainly be to recall principles and to also widen certain obligations related to these principles that we consider as a kind of a code of conduct that should be adopted at a time when all emerging technologies are booming, and especially AI. So that instrument is not palliative care. It's not there to mend issues of other operational guidelines. No, the idea is that we are convinced that this protocol could really express shall we say, the links between the different national approaches of all the parties to the convention. So the protocol is a list of rules that we recall and that gives us a direction in which we are headed, in which we should be acting. We can always have references to operational guidelines, but basically who does what, how. And thanks to that protocol, we can concretely describe the actions that are related to the different fields. And we thought that it would be fully complementary to the other legal instruments that already exist, and it goes further than the ones that already exist. Now, in the 2 or 3 months after we sent our work to the Secretariat, many things happened, and they actually confirmed that we still believe this is the best way to act, to have the greatest impact. 2 days ago I was at the Paris Summit on AI Action Summit, and in the declaration there was only one word on culture. They mentioned the need of global reflection on safety, innovation, sustainable development, human rights, and so on. And at the end, right at the end, they mention intellectual property and linguistic diversity. That's it for culture, as part of a declaration on sustainable and inclusive AI for the whole planet. So that minimizes the impact, the tsunami of this digital revolution. And the President Macron said in his speech that more than ever we should go fast, we should go further by simplifying regulations. Well, that is scary, because we are talking about AI, but without really taking into account the ethical and cultural issues. So I thought to myself, there's really only at UNESCO that we can hold these discussions, and that we can send a strong enough signal, a strong enough call for a more normative action. So if we want culture to have a chance to take its revenge, so to speak, in terms of importance, it would be with normative action as such, then the executive committee, the general conference, and as Eliana said, we really feel that sense of urgency, and we'd rather save 2 years instead of wasting 2 years at the end of the process. Thank you very much. Now, to kick off the dialogue between civil society and experts, I'll start by asking the experts. About the other recommendations. So amongst the other recommendations, apart from the additional protocol that you already mentioned, I recall that the expert group recommended better information sharing, better best practices, better awareness raising and advocacy, also better capacity building. So in that regard, I'd like to ask our experts who know these recommendations by heart. I'm sure lots of other people also know these recommendations, but the experts know them in and out. So what do you think is the most important recommendation, apart from recommendation one on the additional protocol? And why do you think that is? What does it mean, and how should it be implemented? So let's start with you, Lilian, perhaps. Gladly. Thank you. Yes, it's hard to pinpoint one recommendation that's more important than the others, because as you can imagine, they were all thought of as part of a whole block of recommendations. We organized the discussions so that they would be coherent and consistent. So it's hard to pinpoint one, but I could perhaps draw your attention to one additional recommendation. That's one of my favorites. If I had to pick one to highlight here today, it would be one in which I was involved as part of the drafting. Well, there are two recommendations on best practices and information sharing. So recommendations 2 and 3, they are both very important. And the second one is to improve the platform that we already have for information monitoring as part of the quadrennial periodic reports. So we want to share information and best practices in a continuous way. That is the intention behind so recommendation number 3, that is, to revise the framework for quadrennial periodic reports. Because there are issues that are identified as being of utmost importance, like linguistic diversity and diversity of cultural expressions, representation of underrepresented languages, discoverability online, opportunities and threats of AI. And one aspect that I believe is paramount, and that's partly why I picked recommendation number 3, that aspect is all information regarding measures, policies and initiatives regarding public policy funding. I believe that the funding is of the essence. And if you read it in details, you'll see that that recommendation mentions a communication strategy, because we need to revise the framework, enrich it, and by the way, civil society will have an even stronger role to play in the implementation of this recommendation, but we need a platform that can be used by civil society. It shouldn't only be revised, it should be really used by the civil society itself, by the artists, by the cultural professionals. Because we observe that often tools are created, but nobody knows how to use them. So I'll stop there. There are other recommendations that I like very much, of course, but I'll give the floor to Destiny. Yes, very briefly, because we'd like to give you the floor as well. It's very hard to only pick one amongst the 11 recommendations that are left. And by the way, in our first days, we actually identified 30 recommendations. So we had to work very hard to limit these recommendations to only 11. So they are all very important. They are all very complementary as well. They are, of course, cross-cutting, and they are all very important if we want that report to have the impact that it should have. Now, if I had to pick one that can be implemented perhaps more quickly, that would be the recommendation on capacity building for digital culture. That's not only a priority and a need for the Global South. We chose that recommendation because there is such a delay in terms of capacity building, in terms of skills. So we need trainings, programs, initiatives for professionals in the cultural field and also for decision makers in the cultural field. So the idea of having national plans for capacity building in digital culture, including trainings on intellectual property, new trading models, new business models, new strategies to preserve human creativity, even if you can be assisted, of course, by digital creativity through AI, all of this, I believe, could have a very strong impact on the way in which we can accelerate our own ability to act in the digital field when it comes to protecting culture.
You would pre-arise, except for the protocol, but what is your priority?
I think it's the seventh one, that is creation of a national digital culture capacity plans. Because as I told you, we have noticed that we don't have enough capacity inside our country to try to create new regulation or new cultural policy in digital environments. And also we know that we are producing a lot of content, and also we have a lot of handwork, people like producing things for the artificial intelligence industry, but we don't have regulations, and we think that these plans for digital culture could try to face these problems that we have found.
Thank you. Hey, Guillaume.
And Guillaume? Yes, very, very briefly, I'd like to touch on the protocol following what Destiny said on the final declaration of the AI Action Summit, which is quite watered down. And this showcases that as part of the different international legal instruments, even though we talk a lot about AI governance, well, the issue of cultural protection, intellectual property creation, all of these things aren't really taken into account. So the additional protocol would make sense because one could be convinced by the fact that UNESCO can be the international organization paving the way in this field and favoring an AI that protects the creators out there. Now, to answer your second question, what recommendation would I pick beyond the additional protocol? I'd say the last recommendation, recommendation 11, on reinforcing UNESCO's action on AI and culture. This is related to the protocol, of course. It's in line with that goal. And I believe that the issues surrounding creation, culture, and AI are such that there is a real need for UNESCO to be able to have even more structured actions and weigh even more, whether it is internally or externally. And now turn towards you, Director General. What are your preferences? Well, I wouldn't say there's one that I prefer. I believe that's not really the question. What's important is to recognize, first of all, the work undertaken by the experts. They represented all the regions. So it's not an initiative that's based on the South's vision towards the North or the other way around. That was never the spirit of that convention. It's a convention based on solidarity. And I also followed when I was in the room. I followed what was said during the AI Action Summit in Paris, and I must say that it's not an issue of opposing industrial development or innovative development on the one hand, and on the other hand, creators or intellectual property holders. We should stop creating that divide. There are solutions. There are ways in which we can work to comply with essential rights, simply, that exist, that are recognized by most countries, and rights that belong to cultural services and goods creators. So we should only see the convention for what it's for, which is to protect cultural diversity and linguistic diversity. That's it. So now, any additional recommendations, for instance, the one on AI that's done at UNESCO, but that depends on the will of the state parties for them to consider that is a valid recommendation to implement nationally, or whether it is an instrument that UNESCO hasn't created for 20 years. At the time it was conventions, now it could be a protocol. But what I would say is that today there is one convention at UNESCO that has a protocol, the Convention of 1964. That convention was brain dead for 60 years. But with the protocol of 1999, which took a long time to take off, today that convention is finally operational. It's operational in Ukraine, it will be operational in Gaza, it was operational in Iraq, and also in countries at peace. That's the most important thing. And that convention is based not on the idea of finding solutions for everything where there is heritage in conflict areas, but it gives you a clear framework to implement for the member states. Convention of 54, not 64. And here, the idea is exactly the same. The idea is to make the 2005 convention effective in the digital environment. That's it. That's the point of this initial protocol. It's not to create new things. It's just to make it effective in a new environment. Now, we need member states. The question is, will member states be ready to move in that direction or not? Unfortunately, there is also a sense of urgency. We're not in normal times, like in the past, where we could debate on a convention for 30 years. Now, there is such urgency because we're losing control of what's happening. There's every second there's a new innovation in that field. So we don't have the luxury of time. We don't have the luxury of thinking about it for 10 years. In 10 years, well, I might not be here anymore, and maybe most of us. But obviously, innovation is going to be so fast that that convention won't make any sense anymore in the digital world in 10 years' time. That's the truth. And today we already see that algorithms impose on us a way of thinking, an official language, and restricted content ordered by companies. That's what's at stake. But again, the state parties will have to decide. The experts did their job. The NGOs are observing us to see how we are going to act, and we'll see. But what's certain is that in all regional consultation, this topic is a hot one, and it will be a hot topic in the future, but unfortunately we won't have much to show for it. And the ministries of culture and the ministers of culture asked us to move forward in that regard, and now we are organizing a lot of seminars, meetings, but nothing tangible. So this is what's at stake here. But again, we'll see. Now, that being said, with these encouraging, stimulating words, let's start our dialogue. Would anyone like to take the floor in the room or remotely? Please raise your hand if you'd like to add anything, or approve or disprove. Anything that was said? The floor is yours, front row. Good afternoon. I'm the Brazilian Coalition's translator for linguistic diversity, and I'll take the floor on behalf of our chair, because we don't have any other translations apart from English and French. So I'm delighted to be here at UNESCO's headquarters in Paris, representing the Brazilian Coalition and the American coalitions at this 18th session of the Intergovernmental Committee.